is a legend of one man who persuaded his friends to watch every Godzilla movie ever made. This world is on the brink of destruction. We need you now, Godzilla Evangelists!
Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, produced and hosted by Ryan Sargent, featuring Sam Schlenker and Joanna Brodecki. So guys, I have something really cool to show you today.
Wow, can't wait.
The movie we're going to talk about today, Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster, I found this rare alternate dub of it, and I thought I would just play a few select clips from it so you guys could get a unique, like, little look at this treasure. What do you think?
Oh, I'm very excited.
We're down.
All right, okay.
Oh, Godzilla has come to save me. He's gonna pick me up in his little lizard paw, and we're gonna fly away from here. Oh. Yeah, you can do it, Godzilla. You gotta destroy those Ghidorah balls. Thank you, Godzilla. From this day forward, this day will be known as Godzilla Day. Oh!
Is that Ken?
Yeah, couldn't you tell?
Did they do the whole movie?
Unfortunately, that's all of that remains of that rare treasure. It's really cool that we were able to play a little bit for our audience today.
Ryan, which deep depths of the internet did you find that in?
I'm not allowed to speak about it.
I'm really kicking myself over watching the Criterion Edition instead of that version, because that was way better.
Ryan, about every third movie, I like panic text Sam, where do I find the movie? Today, this morning, I found this old Japanese version with no subtitles, and then someone on YouTube had done an English audio dub, just an audio file of a whole hour and 24 minute film. And I was like, oh my God, this is what it's going to have to be. But then I found a very slow-loading version with subtitles. Yeah, and I was like, Sam, where'd you watch it? And he's like, well, I have the Criterion Collection. And I was like, oh, cool, the channel, I could get that login. He's like, no, the first 10 DVDs of the collection.
Anyway, now that we've gotten past your own rare treasure, let's introduce another rare treasure. Hailing all the way from Australia, I have Ed Atlin. I'm so excited about this. This is someone who's made me laugh a lot. One of the great underrated YouTuber animators, and he's here with us today to talk about the movie. How you doing?
Hello. Thanks for having me on here to talk about this fun Godzilla movie.
Yes, I'm glad you opened with fun. I always like having the guest in my corner because I always feel like it's a little bit of a boxing match between me and the skeptics here.
Ryan, you think we're going to challenge you on this one? I'm curious.
I'm curious as well. I try to not make you guys give up too much of the ghost until the end, but this is one that's very near and dear to my heart in the weirdest way.
It's pretty obvious why.
I'm trying to now think of what the weird way that this would appeal to you is.
Yeah.
And other than obviously you having a Godzilla toy that you push down a slide, which is obvious, like that's a given. I don't know what else it could have been.
And that kind of Helga Hey Arnold shrine to Godzilla, like 100%. You had as well.
Oh, of course. I think this is definitely one of the most original Godzilla movies. We did skip ahead a bit here. We've jumped into the 70s. We've jumped into a land where the budgets have further nosedived. Definitely should have been a new kind of experience for you guys.
Yeah, Ryan, I think when we were going through the older ones, you kept being like, man, wait till we get to the 70s. Gonna be groovy, gonna be a fun time. And watching this, I was like, all right, yeah, this is what he was talking about. I'm here for it.
It was funny. I was watching it. And I was like, boy, yeah, they're really diving into the hippie movement here. And then I realized they're a little late for the hippie movement. I think that they're like a year and a half too late. But I appreciate the attempt.
Yeah. Well, you know, there wasn't the Manson family in Japan, so they still had a few more good years. And Ed, this was your first Godzilla movie ever.
Yeah, this is the first one, not really counting the Matthew Broderick one from the 90s, because I don't really remember it. Yeah. I don't really remember that one. I've never, like, revisited it in the last 20 years. So this one was the first, like, Japanese Godzilla movie. I feel like I really, like, jumped in on the best one, maybe.
You definitely dived in on the deep side of the pool.
Yeah.
With a big, slimy, smoggy Duke floating around in there.
The fact, too, that they have all the toys in this one, I was like, I love it. They're just really leaning into Godzilla now. He's there. They all know him. They love him. This little boy's dreaming about him, bringing him to life.
Yeah, I thought that was like the Marvel movies, how you see like kids with action figures of Captain America. It's just like Godzilla's just out there in the world, and he's got like fans and stuff now.
It is super strange, but before we get too deep into the weeds, let's tell our audience about the story, what little of it exists for Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. All right, here we go with the synopsis. Sound effects at the ready, as usual. We begin our story in the Japan of the early 1970s, overwhelmed with rampant pollution. In the midst of this crisis, a slimy new type of monster begins sinking oil tankers off the coast. One of these creatures attacks Dr. Toru Yano and his son Ken during an investigation into local waters, and they name it Hedora. Thank you. I was hoping for a good Hedora set. Dr. Yano is seriously injured, although Ken escapes relatively unharmed. Ken, obsessed with Godzilla, insists our heroic monster will confront Hedora soon. His prediction proves true, as Hedora mutates into an amphibious form and comes on land. This new version feasts on pollution and wreaks havoc until Godzilla shows up and repels the creature. But not before allowing new Hedoras to take form. You just love hitting that one over and over.
I keep waiting for you to bring up the music scene, Ryan, so I can be like...
Don't worry. That's coming.
Running right
over
it.
We're almost there. During the battle, Yukio, a family friend of the Yanos, saves nightclub dancer Miki from one of these new Hedoras.
Groovy.
There you go. In the morning...
How does the song go?
You know the one.
Kaiser.
Carbon.
Oh, yeah. Kaiser.
Pollution and carbon monoxide.
In the morning, the two young people show Dr. Yano where Godzilla and Hedora fought. This gives the doctor the idea that Hedora could be destroyed by drying him out, and he begins to develop a plan.
Developing?
Soon after, Hedora returns in a flying form, briefly tussling with Godzilla as he kills and injures many more civilians. Frustrated with the authorities' inability to do anything about Hedora, Yukio throws a nihilistic party on the foothills of Mount Fuji. Bringing Ken and Miki along, of course. Meanwhile, Dr. Yano directs a military troop to build a giant set of electrodes in the nearby area. Hedora, now in a towering, glowing form, attacks the party and kills most of the young people there. Godzilla, of course, returns, but is overpowered by the mighty Smog Monster. The military troop distracts Hedora, but in their incompetence cannot get the electrodes working.
Damn it!
Godzilla provides a last-minute save, using the electrodes and his new flying abilities to tear up the monster once and for all. Unfortunately, pollution continues to exist, raising the threat of more Hedoras in the future.
Dun dun dun!
Well, there you go. That's the story of Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. Well, this is a pretty unremarkable cast overall.
What? How dare you?
I've never that engaged with the characters in this one.
Ken is my possibly top all favorite Godzilla character of all time.
Really? Okay. I need to hear about this.
I mean, what a sweet little child. And so smart. He knows so much from his scientist father. And he's got those cute little boy short overalls that he wears all the time. And everyone else is dying. And 7-year-old little Ken in his boy shirts is just running around town. Saving every, he got to go to that cool party. I would not be allowed at that party at that age. I don't know. He seems like a pretty great guy. I'm ready for the sequel with him as a teenager.
He's super perceptive. He's always on the lookout, even when he's on a roller coaster.
Yes. Also on that roller coaster, the focus he had, he didn't look scared, but he wasn't having fun. You know, he's an old soul.
I'm with Joanna.
He just loves Godzilla, right? Like, he's a big Godzilla fan. So he should be, he's like the audience, stand-in character.
This is the one thing that maybe I am a stupid fan on, is I'm like, oh, maybe you don't need little kids to be the main characters in these movies. But one thing that I do really like is his weird connection with Godzilla. It's like almost eerie. Like the scene when he's at the top of the roller coaster and he sees Godzilla, like the shadow of Godzilla in the distance. That's almost like something out of a David Lynch movie. It's super bizarre.
Yeah, and it's like Godzilla shows up like while he's asleep, like as if Godzilla's coming out of his dreams or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan, how could you not relate to it? Like when he was having that dream sequence, I was like 100% a dream Ryan had 20 times growing up.
I certainly related to him reading the report. That almost certainly was not about Godzilla in the first place, but he made it about Godzilla. That's definitely something I did multiple times.
That was precious.
I also, you know, you're making a good argument, because when I do see that scene of Godzilla like trying to burn up all the pollution around him, I feel like a tiny twinge of something. I'm like, oh, my hero, he's trying his hardest to solve this problem. This is one problem he can't solve.
That's the problem, is that you're right. He's probably actually making more pollution.
The nuclear fallout from his attack.
Yeah, see, maybe I liked it because from his eyes, like, this was the first movie my little niece, I was like, I could probably watch this with her and she would really get most of it and have fun with it.
You say you don't like child characters and yet you defend the horrible raisin baby in Son of Godzilla. You can't have it both ways. This is a great child character.
I like baby monsters, not baby.
This character is smart. This child is really ahead of the game.
He's never visibly abused in this film.
Oh, that's key.
Which is different from the last one.
All right, I can't relitigate this without my sister to help back me up on this one. Do we want to talk about his dear daddy, Dr. Yano?
Ugh, always the sweet scientist.
Yes. He is, and he has very, I'm never sure how injured he is. It's like his face is burned, but he's also bedridden sometimes.
Well, you need plenty of bed rest when your face has half been burned off by acid.
When part of your face has turned gray.
Right, in the middle of the night when you have like a magical idea. I was surprised that it didn't spread at all. That I thought would have been a nice addition, you know? Time, they have to kill the monster. To go away.
Oh, okay. Like there's little Hedora particles in it. That'd be interesting. He's very grave and somber and all, but my favorite thing is that his wife just doesn't give a shit about his experiments or ideas. She's always just coming in and like she's so committed to being the worrier mom mother, and she's just like, she's gonna hammer that role no matter what's going on.
I don't know if this will be jumping ahead, but like, how was that child allowed at that party at the top of the mountain? That just wouldn't, first of all, the older son wouldn't have been allowed, and there's no way in hell the 7-year-old was going.
Yeah, he was the only kid there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the only child, and the rest of the people there were like teenagers or like 20-something.
And that girl's outfit was awesome. Every costume.
She was a sharp dresser. This is like Annie Hall levels of like fashion forward with Miki. I guess that brings us to sort of the last real character, which is Yukio, who I also thought was the older brother, but he appears not to be related based on what I found in the credits. He's just like a family friend who hangs out with them or something.
Wait, what? That's even weirder to be going to parties with an older boy who isn't your sibling.
I'm not going to dispute that.
And the girl's not his sister?
No, neither of them appear to be related. Hmm.
I love that he's like wearing that track jacket.
But again, it makes this kid cool.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Track jacket is awesome. He's going to be the coolest 7-year-old that he's just hanging out with strangers at parties. And he has a scientist father who just not attentive at all.
What if it's like they know this kid has a psychic connection to Godzilla, sir, but they don't want to talk about it, but they'll keep him around. That's why Godzilla was drawn to them at the end, right?
Right. They realize like, oh, this is like having insurance for the party.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't really help.
Right.
Didn't save anyone.
Good idea in theory. The one thing it does explain is why the kid's not broken up when Yukio dies at the end. Like they don't seem to care at all when he's killed by him.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, he died.
Yeah, I forgot too.
Yeah.
It happens very quickly, but yeah, he gets killed and like nobody mentions it.
And you're kind of like, what was the plan on the mountain? Like, I'll need someone to explain it to me, because you're like the open air. And also, I just want to point out he's always jamming out on an acoustic guitar. I love he's just like going rock on that acoustic guitar. Very funny to me.
Yeah, he plays the angry, petulant college bro so well. He's probably my favorite in this movie. I've been at parties like that Mount Fuji one, and I've hated every single one of them.
Have you been at a party that it starts off in black and white, and then once someone starts playing the guitar, it switches to color?
No, I haven't been to one like that yet.
Ryan, are you spending your weekends going to warehouse parties in downtown LA?
No, this is like when I lived in Virginia. Like I had a quote-unquote cool friend who was always like, let's have a bonfire, let's have a rave, let's like, and I was like, damn, I just want to like watch movies and play video games.
Ryan's like, I don't want to do acid, not tonight. God damn it.
I was just gonna say that you were just, I mean, the quarantine has validated your sentiment.
Yeah,
here now you can keep on watching movies and playing video games. Yeah. And he'll never get to rave
a little. It's validated me a little too much. But yes, that is why we skipped ahead and decided to watch this one. I mean, it's also because I like this one, but it seemed very appropriate, especially in the middle of the movie when everybody is wearing the anti-Hedora masks, which aren't going to do anything, I feel like.
Yeah, it's not going to stop you getting liquefied, I guess, and turning to a skeleton.
How brutal were some of those scenes?
Yeah.
The second those businessmen got sludged, I was like, oh, shit. Cool shot though.
There's a lot of stuff in this I love, and that's one of it. Is it's like I have a whole bit going into this director. I'm gonna get super nerdy into who directed this movie, but I'll just talk about for now, like, there was definitely like an intention to show like the on the ground effects of like being killed by a giant monster. You have that scene where the people playing Mahjong, yeah, they get hit with the blob and they're drowned, and it's actually pretty horrible. You have all the people getting dissolved by the acid mist. You have when Yukio and Miki are in the car and it starts getting swallowed by Hedora. It like very personalizes it in like a way we haven't seen since the black and white movies.
Not only like obviously this one has stronger hittings than some of the in-between ones of touching on, you know, the atomic bomb and also pollution. Yeah, it reminded me of the original one again, of like really devastating effects and how quickly things will turn on people with something like that. And it was like a sad moment in a very fun movie.
And that's that weird disparity, is you have these really dark, hard-hitting moments and then just the absolute weirdest, wackiest shit that's been in these movies to date.
Yeah, it's funny because obviously this is the first Godzilla movie I've seen, so I wasn't really aware of how different it was from the ones that it's following, like until you explained it to me, basically.
Yeah, this was definitely such a strange one to come in.
Right.
I have to give you a lot of credit for not just being like, oh, I gotta go, like halfway through watching.
It was totally fun to watch.
To the movie's credit, it was the most engaged in one of these I've ever been.
Wow.
That's a crazy thing to say.
Same.
So maybe you came in on just the right one. This is the first one where I was like, even in the weird long battle at the end, I was so weirdly fascinated by all of it. And I was like, why is Godzilla ripping balls out of here?
Also, this one, the little animations were like so fun. The groovy music scenes, but like all the little animations, the skeletons they had that were like then in the background of the band, I was like, this is really fun and cool. We're moving along. And then the Godzilla thing, everything with Godzilla felt very personal, like, because I feel like normally he's not as directly impacted, but because his like face got burned and his hand got burned, he felt like particularly pissed. Maybe I'm reading too much into that.
No, like, this is often seen as the moment where a monster got closest to killing Godzilla without any assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no joke, this is probably, I mean, I'm getting into real nerdy fan stuff here.
Ryan, that's what our listeners are here for. So you just fucking run with it, Ryan. Go crazy.
I want to give the other perspective its due, but I love Hedora. Hedora is my third favorite monster after Godzilla and Mothra. He's my favorite Godzilla enemy. He's just got a really strange and cool design. I love how they have the sparkles on the costume to make it look like he's shimmering, like he's dripping and slimy.
Those red eyes.
It's like a very, yeah, the red eyes that are like intentionally vagina shaped, like the no joke, the designer said that vagina scared him, and so he made Hedora's eyes look like vaginas.
Oh my god.
He, you know what he looked like to me, is he looked like one of the, because it's like the eyes in the kind of like floppy shape, you know, with the big old eyes. He reminded me of the one of those furry McDonald's characters. You know what I'm talking about, with like the little feet?
Yes, the purple one.
Yeah.
Grimace.
100%.
Is he Grimace? They're, no, because there are like several. Oh, maybe it's Grimace. I don't know. I always remembered like a few of them where they're just sort of like a shape with eyes and little feet.
Oh, the Fry Kids.
I don't know if we got those in Australia.
Yeah, it's Grimace.
I know Grimace. I know the main cast of McDonald's. I don't know the supporting characters.
This is the Ralph Fiennes of McDonald's characters.
Right.
Yeah, they're definitely working with a lower budget, but I think they did something really creative with it, and just love all the cool mutations and abilities. Plus, I think I just really like slime monsters.
Who doesn't? This is going to be, again, where, like, Ryan, you've had me watch far too many of these movies, but the origin story of this monster, I was, like, a little more here for it because it felt a little less out of left field. Like, I was like, okay, the sludge in the ocean, okay. And like when Ken at the beginning was like, it's a tadpole, and the dad was like, do tadpoles live in salt water? And he's like, no. I'm like, I love it. Like, this makes sense. We're coming to it together. You know, he's not just like flying in from out of nowhere.
Is this the first one since the original that actually has a theme? Like, actually has a social bent to it of any kind?
I would dispute of any kind. I would say it's the first one with a fully developed social message. Like, if we go back to Godzilla versus Mothra, I guess that was disputed that it was written by a socialist, but it definitely has socialist themes of, and the original Mothra, of course. Yeah. Like, can a person be owned by another person even if they're a monster? That's about as far as they developed it, though, so I understand what you're
saying. Yeah, but I guess like this felt like, if yeah, I should, that's fair. The others have themes, but this is the first one where I felt like it was really truly and directly about a human's relationship with blank. And so, you know, like the first being, hey, he's a symbol of the atomic bomb, and this one being like, it's a symbol of, you know, people polluting the earth. And I was here for it. It moved me.
Yeah, I think similar to what Jojo Rabbit was trying to do. Again, kind of through a child's eyes.
Yeah, it definitely is really, really special in its own way. It hit hard then, because even though I'm sure a lot of people didn't take it seriously, but it hit hard then because Japan basically had completely unregulated pollution at the time. It was like truly horrific stuff, like mercury going through the rivers and stuff like that. So it was definitely on the director's mind, and it still hits today because we still seem to have trouble facing up to our smog monster, or our carbon monster, as it is.
Yeah, I made the mistake. It recently, within the last couple weeks, I watched, admittedly, only the first half of First Reformed, the movie with Ethan Hawke, and the reason I stopped watching it was too real in regards to environmental responsibility. And I was like, with everything that's going on, this is too heavy. But it was in my mind. And then watching this, I was like, no, we need another one of these. Like, we need one of these now. We need to make, well, what are we doing making an extended MonsterVerse? We need to make a current day smog monster.
Yeah.
Because it speaks now.
Sam, pitch it.
This is maybe the most on my side I've ever had you.
Sam, time to write that script. I feel like we're defending the movie to Ryan. We're like, Ken is amazing. Ryan, shut the fuck up.
Ryan, is it your favorite one? Is it number one for you?
It is not number one for me. It is in my top five.
It's Ed's number one, okay?
Oh yeah, my number one forever. I feel like I can't watch another one now because it's just not going to live up to this one. Like, it already set the bar so high.
It definitely won't.
You joke, but that might be true. It is my favorite one.
Yeah, Sam and I have seen 34 of them so far, so we could speak to it.
Oh, you guys still got a long way to go. But as long as we're hitting the serious note, we've sort of been circling this drain. So let's talk about the director. Let's talk about Yoshimitsu Banno. I'm just going to spill all my nerdery at once.
I was going to say, by that, you say, let's talk about it. I mean, and you talk about it. You talk about the director now.
Well, I think I have something interesting to share with you guys. And maybe you have a reaction to it. But this was not only his first Godzilla movie. This was his first theatrical movie. So this was like his big shot. And he wanted to take Godzilla back to his origins as much as possible. which, you know, we picked up on is definitely like a through line back to the original movie. He wanted it to be a parable for a really serious issue and to make something that would make like a really strong impact. While he was making it, the producer for the entire Godzilla series, Tomoyuki Tanaka, was in the hospital. He was like very sick. And he came out like towards the end of the editing phase and saw what Bano had made. And he was apparently like furious. He was like, "You're never going to work in this town again. You've ruined the Godzilla series." But there is a happy ending because
he was a fan of Sludge.
What had he made before? Short films?
Yeah, he made like a television documentary and shorts. But there is a happy ending. So decades later, he's like, "You know what? I'd like to give it another shot. I want to make an IMAX movie with Godzilla." And he's going to go to Africa and fight a pollution monster in Africa. Just like this bizarre, bizarre idea. And he shopped it around for years. And eventually, who would latch onto it but Legendary? And they were like, "You know what? We don't really like your idea. But we do like that you have connections at Toho." So Yoshimitsu Banno actually brokered the deal to make the newest Godzilla movies. And he's an executive producer on both of them. So he got his last laugh there in the end.
The two most recent ones that have come out?
Yes.
I believe he died before the last one came out.
Yes, he did. He did die before the last one came out, unfortunately.
But yeah, I was fascinated watching it. I was like, who directed this? Because it's clearly
different.
It's clearly not anyone who's done any of the ones we've watched. and was, you know, saw that he basically, he didn't direct a whole lot of movies. This was his first, didn't do a whole lot after it, and then he was like an assistant director.
You have done your own research. See, yeah. It wasn't just me this time.
I was going to let you talk. You know, I didn't want to disrupt your flow. But no, I am an expert on this filming.
that kind of bums me out. I wish you were going to say he like made the second one or after this, or I was kind of hoping again for a Ken sequel.
He wanted to.
Oh yeah, he wanted to. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had like multiple ideas for a sequel to this that
damn it
never happened. And there was going to be a direct sequel, right? Wasn't there just going to be another one right after it?
Well, yeah, that was his idea anyway. Like that's what that weird cliffhanger. That's like, and yet another.
And then there's not.
That, oh, that's so good.
I think too, I know you said lower budgets, but the simplicity of it, I was really there for it. I'm down for like the four characters, pretty simple, straightforward storyline. Because sometimes when they try to do too much and throw too many monster fights in there and there's too much going on, I'm like, and they're island hopping all over the place. You know, sometimes this straightforward story is nice.
This is a serious comment I have, which is rare. But like, I feel like the, like when people make low budget movies, sometimes it encourages them to actually be inventive and kind of like come up with weird ways to keep people's attention, because you can't, you know, it's like there's so many moments they're like, oh, they didn't have a budget, you know, the black cutout of Godzilla near the roller coaster, but like it's so, there's so many weird little transitional mm-hmm. ideas and animated things and like the all the talking heads on the TV that are happening at the same time while like a baby's crying. And you're just like, this is never boring. This is the least boring one we watched. It's my favorite one.
Wow.
I don't know. Again, don't make me defend it from you. It's number one. No question. Easy number one.
Staking it out early, huh?
I suppose the final battle was a bit on the confusing and slow side for me.
Sam, they're always a little slow.
Yes.
I like the final battle. There's just like a moment where it peaks and then it keeps going for like another 10 minutes.
I thought it ended and then that second guy's like, and then Godzilla's like, what?
Yeah, do we want to talk about Godzilla flying?
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the best moment in cinematic history.
Well, I love when the slime monster picks Godzilla up. That's when I'm like, oh, tables have turned. That's new. No one has done, like, they fucked him up with his face. Now they're picking him up like a little toy. This is going to really piss him off.
Well, even backing up, even the concept that that the slime monster can turn into a UFO, like a stingray-shaped UFO.
And can fly.
Is great and weird.
Why can it fly? Makes that part I was like, okay, the origin makes sense, but this step is beyond.
You know, the natural evolution of the tadpole is first it grows legs and then it becomes a flying yeah. stingray.
and then it turns into a big tough guy.
Damn, how could I forget?
And it can switch between, like, back and forth between each of its different modes, like, depending on what terrain it's on or whatever.
The color?
It's very Pokemon or Digimon, actually.
Yeah, the pink glowing, all of that was really cool. I also felt kind of bad for the guy because, like, he didn't know. He wasn't intentionally spraying this terrible shit down, was he?
I think he was because I think they said that they realized he was basically, like, terraforming the Earth. He was making it all sludge and slime and acid so he could have a good time and enjoy living in it.
That sucks then.
Yeah. Hador is a nasty guy, all things considered. But also, speaking of that final fight, I love that nihilistic party where he's just like, you know what, we can't do anything, we should just all go up here to die, which is very millennial, actually.
The one I was watching paused like every 10 seconds to like load, so I like lost a little in the process, but that makes sense. I thought he was like, we'll attract him and then something something and then someone will fight him, but no, they were really just like, we'll die. And that's cool.
Yeah, well, his initial plan was like, we're going to have a million man march. Like, the youths of Japan will rise up and get, like, people to stop polluting. But then he's like, well, only 100 people showed up, so we're fucked, so we'll die. That's legitimately his perspective.
And Ken was allowed.
Yeah.
Well, because the scene...
allowed to go to this death
party. The scene begins in black and white, and everyone's all sad. And he's like, hey, wait a minute. We love music. And then it, like, becomes colorful all of a sudden.
He's like, I forgot. We're at a camp trip. I brought my acoustic in the back seat of my Subaru.
You guys want to hear me cover Creep by Radiohead? Because that's the only song I know.
Oh, no. You're reminding me of those old parties too much.
That's what I was kind of going for. Speaking of which, so that this is a tangent, but I used to work at a sandwich place. I worked at Bruxy across the street from Chapman University, where Ryan and I went to school. And there was a time where there was a super long line, and there was like a bro with like the with Sperry's and, you know, on his feet and an acoustic guitar on his back. And there was like a family with a 7 or 8 year old, like a Ken aged kid. And the kid is looking at this bro's guitar, and the parents go, oh, he loves guitars. Would you play him a song? And the guy goes, oh yeah. And he flips around and he just goes, I'm a creep. he realizes he's about to say fuck and like quickly says like freaking, but says it so loudly, and again the parents are still like super horrified. And yeah, that's basically that's all I can think about when I see any college-aged person with an acoustic guitar.
Scarred for life.
I can completely understand that.
Yeah,
and once again, you provided me with a perfect transition here, which is that I love the theme song, which in Japanese is Bring Back the Sun, which I don't know how you get all that out of just Kaisei, but apparently that's what it means.
Yeah, the singing just wasn't subtitled at all. There's like two scenes where someone sings without subtitles, right?
Ryan, I got the vibes right from the beginning too. I knew you were going to love it because I was getting straight up Mothra Twin vibes. And I was like, ooh, Ryan's going to be into this movie. It also, the song, the first time she sings it for the intro, like there were some subtitles for me and it they were like pretty basic. They were like pollution and dirt. And in seventh grade, we all had to write songs about saving the environment. And it like really brought back those tunes. I'm sure the non-translated version is nicer, prettier.
Well, yeah, without knowing what the lyrics meant, it sounds like a fun song, but it's like visually they're showing you like all these horrific images of pollution and dead animals and stuff.
That mannequin doll.
Oh yeah,
the mannequin,
the broken up mannequin.
Oof, that was spooky.
The most heavy-handed visual metaphor of all time, with the clock sinking yeah. into the pollution.
Ryan, how popular was this when it came out? Like, was it like A Star Is Born and this song is playing on the radio, or did it not hit that big?
Probably not the biggest hit. Not the next movie we're gonna watch, but the next movie chronologically did have a song that was pretty popular with kids, but this one I don't think made a big impact.
That's a bummer.
Actually, would you guys like to hear the version from the English dub? It's pretty entertaining. I'll just play a little bit of it for you.
Of course. Oh, we have cobalt, it's full of mercury. Too many fumes in our oxygen. All the smog now is choking you and me. Good Lord, where is it gonna end? Sounds like a Joni Mitchell to me.
Definitely a Joni Mitchell vibe.
It's up to us to make a choice. We know what it's worth to save the earth. Come raise your voice.
I thought you were going to show us like a dub, like the intro one you showed us.
Yeah, that's what I thought was coming too.
Yeah.
That was much better.
That would have been funny if I had you do sing Save the Earth. but I didn't want to put you through that. It was sung by a woman named Adrienne Russ, who was a secretary at AIP who imported the movie originally. And she was like super interested in music. So when she found out somebody needed to do this song, she's like, oh, please let me do this, please. And so she got a translation of it and cobbled these lyrics together. And the producer of the movie was so amused. He's like, sure, go do it. And she's like, I need a chorus. So he just went around the halls and was like, you're fired if you don't go in there and do the chorus for this song. So it's just people who would just like come out of their office.
Their day job,
which you can really hear.
Yeah,
my favorite part of the soundtrack was the Godzilla entrance music every time he showed up. It was funny, like every time, just the trumpet or a trombone sound or something.
Like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's so wacky.
I loved when he was flying, that we were all this like boom, ba-da-dum, ba-. And then when they're flying, it's like suddenly like war, like 1940s government army music. They're like, doo, 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 doo.
I love the theme song for this movie, but the music has leaves a little something to be desired. Bring me back to Ofu Bouquet.
Get out of here.
Ryan, you need to just leave this podcast.
Yeah, best soundtrack to any Godzilla film, bar none, this one.
Yeah, bar none. Ryan, pick a better one.
Oh, you better be joking.
I'm not.
What? It's so awful.
What?
It's the best.
Ryan, you have no taste.
It's certainly on the tacky side. But again, I was always entertained by it. Every music cue, the scene transitions are so great. And every music cue where you just slam into a new scene and some silly music's playing and you're just like, I'm re-energized.
They committed to, they like used a lot more music and they varied it up enough. They really committed to that.
I just always think Godzilla's theme sounds drunk. Like he's just like has a hangover and he's trying to get out of bed.
He looked, are you kidding me? After the fight, he looked like the most drunk he's ever looked ever. He looks drunk 60% of the time in these films.
Yes, in a way it is appropriate.
And he's tired. He doesn't want to have to do this shit. Are you kidding me? He's like, I got to do this again.
He has to clean the ocean like he's got to do community service. Like, yeah, let's show up drunk to that. His entrance where we just cut to a sunset and then he kind of appears in frame. I was so excited. That's my favorite Godzilla entrance so far.
That is a really good one. And he even gets a second cool intro, actually, when Adora's, getting a good rip off the smokestack, which I want to talk about in a second. Godzilla's breath just comes out of nowhere, just out of the darkness. And then he appears back there. I'm like, that's cool. I like it when they bring him in cool differently. This whole podcast is one of the things about it is this whole journey for me to figure out like why, what is Godzilla? What is special? And I can't totally put my finger on it, but that scene is like exemplifies it. Like Hedorah like crawling up there, getting a good rip, and his like eyes are closing and he's purring in pleasure. Like he's like, that's a real character. And like scenes where he's like skulking away in shame, or Godzilla like tries to do a cool thing to block his laser and he burns his hand and he like jumps around shaking it. It's like that stuff that's like very humanizing to the monsters and makes them like characters. Like you don't see that in other movies like this. And that gets right to the pit of my Godzilla heart.
I'm gonna cry. Ryan, So sweet.
I love that part where Hedorah shoots like a laser beam at Godzilla, and he totally does the Wonder Woman block pose, but like it just burns his wrists.
Yeah, was this new? Because this Ken, when he did this arm across his face and arm forward, and Godzilla did that too at one point, and like Ken was watching from the car, I'm like, I don't think we've seen that before, right?
No. It was actually very E.T., like when E.T. and Elliot get linked and they start doing
this. Yeah, I was all here for this, like, rub the sweat off your face and put your arm forward before you fight, but I didn't know if it came from anywhere. I also liked that the sludge slimy guy, as he's like kind of building up. At first, when all the teens were partying, I was like, oh, are they going to like shame the teens for partying? Are they all going to die? And I like that the sludge went down the stairs and they all went, and then it went, let him be. And then he just crawled back up. I thought that was great. And there was a cat there. Like, see, that made me think maybe he's like not too bad of a guy. Because why didn't that cat die if he could hurt Godzilla that badly by just being touched? Any thoughts on that?
All I'll say is that as a former member of a band who played in venues like that,
yeah.
I saw many an older person walk down the stairs into the room, take like 5 good seconds of listening, and then leave. So it was familiar. They usually didn't leave a cat. That's new.
Leave a cat behind. I didn't think of that. The Hedorah was just like, oh, this ain't my scene. You were wondering if they were going to put blame on the teenagers. Now, there does seem to be like a very hostile, like anti-authority theme mm-hmm. with the movie. Like the government and the news like can't get facts about Hedorah right. They're like, oh, he only comes out at night. He's only in the water, and it's like always wrong, always like misinforming people.
Yeah, and the dad is like, no, they're not getting it.
The industrial people refuse to stop polluting. We always see those big, you know, sludge banks going across the ocean. The military is so incompetent they can't even put together giant electrodes.
One of the generals at the end was like, what the hell are we even doing here then? And I thought that was awesome. They just like froze on his face for a second and they were like, no, it's broken. Also, that construction man getting skeletonized, whew.
Oh, yeah, that was brutal. I remember I was so scared of that scene when I was a little kid. I could not watch the people getting dissolved by the ice.
For a second there, it seemed when they're like, oh, the fire will... Like, they start throwing the torches at the smog monster, and they're like, the fire will do it. And I was like, no. Like, I was worried that it was going to be fire because that's kind of cliche. And I was like, no, fire doesn't defeat the smog monster. It's like... It's like converting to clean energy and having electric cars would do. And then it wasn't fire. And then they did defeat him with electricity. And I thought it was wonderful. I was like, I was so impressed. I made that connection and I was just like, wow, this is so ahead of its time. I was very tired when I watched it. So everything seemed brilliant.
It's probably the right mood, the perfect mood to see it.
And now Japan has all those cute little cars and, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are a step ahead of us.
See, this movie made a difference.
Yeah.
When Godzilla is ripping apart Hedorah, and then he like is finished and exhausted, and then he starts thinking about like all the pollution in the ocean, and he looks so depressed. That was like such a mood.
He had so many moods this time. And then when he ripped, I thought it was his eyeballs, whatever it was. When he like looked tired, he's like, it's done. And then he's like, no, I hate this bastard. Rips him out. I really thought he was going to eat them. Like, I was like, that would be amazing if he just took a bite of that right now and then burnt it to a crisp.
It could be his eyes if you're like, yo, he has a second pair of eyes inside, like the smaller Hedorah. It could be eggs. That's something that people have proposed, like eggs to hatch new Hedorahs. Or, of course, the immortal joke of every immature Godzilla fan. Those are Hedorah's balls.
I thought it was like his power source or something, but then he totally tries to fly away after he destroys them, so I don't know. That was the moment where the fight was going on too long at that point. Although it's also the part where Godzilla flies, so that's really the best part.
Right, he re-energizes it a little bit.
Yeah.
Did the director or anyone ever make a comment on why he flies?
I actually do know that. It's because the special effects director was doing all these shots that were like really grim and dark and human deaths. And he's like, this is really depressing. Like, I feel like we're going to like upset all the kids and make them cry. I should put in something light. And as we've learned, the special effects directors have a weird amount of autonomy. So yeah, he came up with that idea and just threw it in there. And yeah, it's just in the movie.
Also, again, because anytime the slime monster flies across the screen as a UFO, it's also very like quick and janky. It's like, beep. It like reminds me of watching a Scooby-Doo episode, which I guess makes sense.
The music reminded me of Scooby-Doo as well.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I love it so much. Is I, you know, Scooby-Doo vibes the whole way. So this is, I'm a huge Scooby-Doo fan, but I'm going to ruin at least the original show for everyone, which is that, so I got the original two seasons, the only two seasons of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? On DVD a while back. And I was watching all of them and I realized that in every single episode, if someone explains the myth of the monster, like if someone's like, you know, oh yes, the Martian skeleton thing, it haunts this area, the person who tells the myth is always the person.
Damn it, Sam, now there's no mystery for me when I watch it.
Did Scooby-Doo ever fly, though?
Oh, man. I'm sure at one point he at least wore a hat that had, you know, a little flying thing on it for something. But no, not of his own doing, sadly.
No, but we should challenge someone to make that. to just animate Scooby-Doo flying in the exact backwards curled up like a shrimp way that Godzilla does.
Yeah, should we describe? Because some people listening just haven't seen it, right? They don't know that he, like, just breathes with such power that he flies up into the air and chases after Hedorah.
And it takes a few seconds to get him up. Like, he has to, like, collect himself and be like, oh, time to do this. And then he has to be like, oh, and he goes, like, 2 feet. And then he's like, and then he, like, goes two more. And then one third when he's finally, like, off at this level he's flying at.
He takes off like a rocket, which I guess in very, very theoretical sense makes sense. I'm like, all right, maybe he's getting enough power to get off the ground, but then he transitions into a horizontal form, which just makes absolutely no sense at all. He's just curled up like a baby and just like shooting through the air like the Enterprise.
It also makes sense that he had to do it in post because there's no like jump, you know, there's no prep. He's literally like, okay, which static shot from the roller coaster scene do I have that I can just move around a little bit and make him be flying.
So is the flying controversial among Godzilla fans? Like some people hate it?
Yes, people do not like the flying scene. They routinely talk about it like it's one of the most, one of the worst things that's happened in a Godzilla movie.
Is that like in The Last Jedi when Luke Skywalker drinks the milk or something? There, people were like, hashtag not my Godzilla.
Exactly.
I would actually argue, since it's visually similar, it might be like Princess Leia levitating herself through space.
I was just thinking I want to take that scene of Leia flying and add the Godzilla music from this movie to
I have something that really bothered me, maybe not quite as much as all the silking by the larva in the other movies, but on that level. And it's really specific, but it's that Hydra's lasers don't come out of his pupils. They come out like above his pupil. It bothered me so much. And I don't know why. There's some kind of very specific OCD that I have where that really bothered me. It's so gross that I can't tell you why.
Maybe it's the yonic sort of thing where it's very feminine. Maybe you have an issue with vaginas as well, Sam.
Well, no, but it's like it would be the equivalent. Like, can you imagine, listeners, tell me if this would gross you out. If you were watching Superman and Superman was going to use his heat vision, and the way he shot heat vision was by rolling his eyes back in his head and blasting a fine laser out of the whites of his eyes. That's what this is. And it's awful.
Sam, he's an alien form, you know? Like, who's to say the sludge monster should follow these kind of human, you know, ways that we're set up biologically?
The way that humans fire lasers out of their eyes.
Out of the corners, like every good American.
I didn't even notice that because, again, the lag in my movie. I think I just missed a few moments for sure.
This is completely apropos of nothing, but that seems like an appropriate way to end the discussion. Did you guys know that Hedorah is on the cover of a Frank Zappa album?
No.
See, I'm a little bummed because when I was Googling Hedorah frantically this AM, Ghidorah kept coming up, and I get it. He's, like, got, you know, more fans behind him, but I think I like this one more.
I think as a 16-year-old, I commissioned a famous Godzilla fan artist to do a sketch of Hedorah versus Ghidorah. I still have it somewhere. I'll see if I can find
it. Ryan, you better post that shit. What are you holding that back for? How much did that cost you at 16?
I think you did it for $30.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
But anyway, yeah. Frank Zappa, Godzilla fan. Who knew? We must go on to our final judgment as Godzilla evangelists. So for you, Ed, and for anyone who's never listened to the show before, how this works is, as Godzilla evangelists, we have a holy duty to assign each Godzilla movie to its proper place in Godzilla heaven, purgatory, or hell, depending on how we feel about it and how we can justify it. Next up, at the pearly gates, is Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. And I think it's clear how most of us stand, but it's especially clear how you stand, Sam. So you go ahead and start us out.
Yes, so here are the reasons I put it at the right hand of God himself in Godzilla heaven. The pros are it's super entertaining, it's very bizarre and crazy, but never boring. I think it is more I like the editing of it. I like the wacky ideas and inventiveness, and there's a little bit like the last battle is a little on the long and weird side, but again, like the rubric I've used for others, I would love to put it in the background of a party someday. that just for people to comment, like, what are Godzilla's flying and then yanking maybe eyeballs out of a carcass. Like, it's heaven, and it has a theme. It actually has something it's trying to say. So heaven, this is not my number one favorite now.
Wow.
Wait, beats out the original even?
Well, the original is probably the better movie, but this is my personal favorite. The one I had the most fun watching.
All right. Well, I can accept that. Although I do hope to someday show you a Godzilla movie that you can aim above putting on in the background. We'll see if we get there. All right, I'll go. I feel like I usually go last, so I'll slip in second here. I see a few more issues with it from my perspective, or maybe you just don't care about them. That's more likely. But yeah, there's some dull stretches. The biggest one, obviously, is like midway through the fight, but there's a couple other moments leading up to Hedorah's first attack where I'm like, all right, this is going a little slow, we need some interest. But I really think it's so creative, like one of the most creative Godzilla movies. Really benefited from Yoshimitsu Banno, who had this really out there script, really out there direction, and he just brought this unique perspective and with this scrappy little budget, and it's kind of a mess, but it's a glorious mess in my book. So I'm also going to put it in heaven. Why don't you go, Ed?
It's definitely going to heaven. Watching it as like someone who's like aware of what Godzilla is, but hasn't watched one of these movies, it works as like a total standalone Godzilla story. I like how it actually does have like a serious message, but it's also like really wacky and weird and funny as well. I like that Godzilla was the hero, sort of, because I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, he was definitely like full superhero.
Yeah, but it's not like he's the hero, but it's not clear if he's like accidentally saving the humans. Like he doesn't seem to really care about them. Like after he just wanted to kill Hedorah, and then the people are standing there kind of afraid, wondering if Godzilla's gonna kill them too, and it's like Godzilla just kind of shrugs and walks away.
All right, Joanna, take us home. What is your judgment?
Same. Heaven. I think that it took a lot of the things we've seen in the films over and over again. You got the scientists, you know, but the message was very clear. The songs that we've had in some of the past films, they like had some of their own catchy tunes in this one. I loved Ken. Ryan, you can fight me on that for forever. I thought he was a great leading man. The costumes were fun. Everything was funky. The transitions were great. I have, like, it wasn't full-on, obviously, Scott Pilgrim, but I like a lot of stuff Edgar Wright does, and I've recently rewatched that, and I was like, these transitions are, like, funky fun. We got cool editing going on here. And I liked the sludge monsters. Some of the monsters I'm just not there for, but I liked what he was about and what made him click or tick. So I'm putting it in heaven. I don't know that I'd note it my number one, but up there with King Kong, Broderick, and the original.
Like watching the news and they're talking about there's a monster destroying the city and someone just switches it off and they're like, don't pay attention to that.
Yeah. Okay, here's my pitch for how you would do Godzilla versus the coronavirus monster. I'm just piggybacking off of you, Ed. Is I think it's a monster that is just like a horrible body horror monster that is just anytime two people are near each other, they just get stuck together. They just get stuck. And so you have to stay 6 feet apart. But then the more of them get stuck in onto this like thing, you end up with this weird monster that's just like a giant morphing pile of people who are all attached to each other. And they fight Godzilla. Godzilla fights them. Because they're all, you're just infecting them in its exponential growth. Like, and then stupid people are still going out and like, hey, let's go have a bonfire party all together. And then they all just go, zip, and they just get stuck together. Yeah, and then the giant one walks over and just like takes that chunk and sticks it in the side of his head and is like, you're me now.
That's both horrifying and hilarious, which is very on-brand for a sequel to this movie.
I don't know if I have a fully fleshed out pitch, but what I do know is that I want to cast Elon Musk in the film, and he is in charge of like whoever needs to create a solution to fight back the pollution monster that's coming. And he's like kind of erratic and weird and is still married to Grimes in my movie also. All of that makes it into the film in bringing, you know, pollution down in the world.
I find him to be a bit of a capitalist vulture, but you know what? This can be his redemption story. I'll give him another chance.
I will also agree with that, Ryan.
You know, Grimes could be the name of the monster in this film as well.
Or maybe it's just his son, XYLNQ, that's actually the hero of the film.
I'm glad we just dated this one, just put a big stamp on it. I guess the virus talk did that. Hopefully that'll date it. What would be good? Yeah, if it was Godzilla versus global warming, it would be cool to have like a monster that was able to like separate into little pieces. I guess this is very Hedorah, but like hide in like the tailpipes of cars. And then like when Godzilla least expected it, they like all blast out and smother him. I know I asked this question as a joke, but now I'm like, huh. They should make this.
You and Sam are both gonna be writing it by the end of the night.
Alright, we're gonna do it, Sam.
Yeah, let's again, we gotta go pitch. They're totally gonna buy this. The global warming one would basically be that the real monster, there's a monster, but then the real monster is all of the lobbyists who are claiming that it's not real. And so then most of it is just Godzilla trying to convince them to open
their eyes. Yeah, I kind of want a monster, but not actually a monster, who's just like a pissed off, big ass old sequoia tree who just like comes stomping around into town. And I don't want Godzilla to necessarily kill him, but I just want them to kind of like be friends by the end of it and everyone gets the message, you know?
Okay, yeah, they shake hands and they look directly at camera.
They're both pissed and they're both speaking out together.
All right, well, we like to always close things out with a message or two from our fans. This one is from Austin B. Howdy. I've just started recently listening to your podcast, and it's an absolute joy to listen to. As a lifelong Godzilla fan, it's great hearing your conversations about these movies that I have such a connection to. It's also given me many a laugh at work, for better or worse, as well as giving me new perspective on the films. I hope we're not getting you in trouble at work. But anyways, he says, or she says, for example, I've never thought of Kong as a tired, hungover uncle until listening. Keep on spreading the good word.
Wow. I'm glad that we could get that across, because that's exactly the vibe Kong brings to the table.
This one is from Autumn. This was on the Godzilla Raids Again episode. And they said, I put this on right after finishing the movie on my phone at work tonight, and I laughed through this whole podcast. Makes working the graveyard shift more interesting. But yeah, the narrating in Godzilla Raids Again threw me for a spin. LMAO.
I'm so glad that one specifically, because that I have re-listened to that episode and it is very funny.
It is in its own special way. I think that's what we really learned today, is every movie is its own little special gem and deserves to be protected.
Ryan, are we able to share where we're going next?
To give the audience a little glimpse behind the curtain, I don't think we've decided yet, but it might be War of the Gargantuas with a special guest, my father, who saw the movie in the theaters. It might be Destroy All Monsters, which I think we teased a long time ago and is also one of my top five, which I would be very excited to see. It'll be one of those.
Perfect.
Quite possibly interrupted by another Jedi Evangelist, because those are easy to do. We can pop one of those out, and I want to watch Empire again, so maybe you'll see that next.
Yay.
Before we go, first of all, I want to thank Ed for being on with us today.
Thank you, Ed.
Yeah.
So happy that you were able to do the show with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time talking about Godzilla. and also, I am honestly like a fan of the podcast now. I started listening after you invited me on. And hopefully listening to myself on it won't ruin it, I hope.
That's very sweet of you to say. And yeah, go ahead and check out Ed's channel, his Twitter. It's all great. And I just want to say to you, the fans, the listeners, maybe you're not a fan yet, but you will be someday. Thank you for listening. You've given us life, our lifeblood, and we hope that we can give a little something back to you, especially in this hard time. Keep on listening. Keep on sharing it with people. That really helps. If you rate it on iTunes, that is a fantastic help for us. If you subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts, that's a big help to us. We would really appreciate all of those things. Does anybody have any plugs or last minute messages or thanks to throw off today?
I always want to say, you know, vote who your favorite host is, but we haven't gotten any response on that, so you know, I just gotta table it.
No, that should just be the end. Yeah, again, I don't think anyone cares.
Yes, exactly. So I'm just going to say thanks for listening.
That'll have to do. So wear your masks, stay out of the smog, and keep spreading the word of Godzilla. Godzilla Evangelists is produced by me, Ryan Sargent, with support from my friends Joanna Brodecki and Sam Schleicher. All our incredible music is composed by Robert Mai, and our wonderful artwork is drawn by Cassidy Stone. This episode was edited by the ever-capable Julia Waldman. Special thanks to our families, friends, and the talented artists who made the movies that we talked about today. Godzilla Evangelists is a satirical, critical work, not affiliated or endorsed by Toho, Legendary Pictures, or anyone behind the Godzilla series. Visit our website at godzillaevangelist.com. We're also on Twitter at GodzillaCast and Instagram at GodzillaEvangelists. If you prefer to listen to us online, we have a YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time. In the meantime, keep spreading the word of Godzilla.